afternoon. Thank you for joining us. Today we are holding a media conference call with EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy, Labor Secretary Tom Perez, and President of United Farm Workers, Arturo Rodriguez. Today, we will be announcing new standards to protect our nation's farm workers. This is a media conference call that is on the record. After brief remarks from our speakers, we will then turn it over to a Q&A session. We will have time for one question per reporter, and we'll try to get as many folks as possible. So at this time, I will turn it over to Administrator Gina McCarthy.
All right. Thank you, Liz, and thanks, everybody, for joining the call today. I want to also thank Secretary Perez and President Rodriguez for being here to share in this really exciting announcement. I also want to thank Jim Jones, who is the Assistant Administrator here at EPA over our Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention, and his entire team for doing a wonderful job on outreach and for pulling together this really important rule. As you know, today EPA released revisions to our worker protection standard. This is a really big step forward to better protect the nation's 2 million farm workers and their families from pesticide exposure. The rule covering farms, forests, nurseries, and greenhouses has not been updated for 20 years. And so what we're announcing today has been a long time coming. Protecting our nation's farm workers from harmful pesticide exposure is part of EPA's mission to ensure equal protection for all Americans. Farm workers deserve to be healthy and safe while they earn a living, and it's our job to ensure they have fair, equitable working standards to protect them. The new revisions are an important milestone to better protect the millions of agricultural workers across our country who plant, tend, and harvest the food that American families put on their tables every day. EPA's revised worker protection standards will afford these farm workers similar health protections as those already enjoyed by workers in other jobs. EPA estimates that each year between 1,800 and 3,000 potentially preventable pesticide exposure incidents are reported from farms, forest nurseries, and greenhouses covered by the current worker protection standard. We also know that there's widespread underreporting of those incidents, so the true number of exposure incidents is likely much higher. These incidents lead to sick days, lost wages, medical bills, and absences from work and schools, and we estimate that known acute agriculture worker illnesses cost about $10 to $15 million every year, and the actual costs we know are much higher. These numbers tell us that the existing rule was just not working the way that it should, but many of the most common types of incidents can be prevented if we adjust our standards to be more protective. So that's exactly what we sought to do. So let me list out some of the key updates that the standards now include. First, for the first time ever, we have set a minimum age requirement. Children under 18 are prohibited from handling pesticides. Previously, mandatory training to inform farm workers of their protections was required only once every 5 years. The new standard requires this training annually so that farm workers will better understand the protections afforded to them. And we've expanded the trainings to include instructions for workers on how to reduce take-home exposures from pesticides on their clothing. We've also expanded mandatory posting of no-entry signs for the most hazardous pesticides. The signs prohibit entry into pesticide-treated fields until residues decline to a safe level. We'll now require record-keeping to improve states' ability to follow up on pesticide violations and to enforce compliance. Records of application-specific pesticide information, as well as farm worker training, must be kept now for 2 years. Changes in personal protective equipment will be consistent with the Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration standards for ensuring respirators are effective, including fit tests, medical evaluation, and training. And we'll continue the exemption for the immediate family members of the farm owner with an expanded definition of immediate family. That's just a snapshot of the updates. You can read more about the full set of changes on our website. The important thing to know is that these updates are a result of extensive public engagement and input. We're taking comment from a range of diverse concerns and perspectives during this process, and we're taking those concerns and perspectives into account in the design of this final rule. from federal, state, and local partners to farm worker communities to farmers and growers. We've brought everyone into an open, transparent process for sharing these perspectives. These result in an updated standard that's in line with EPA's environmental justice efforts. Farm worker communities often represent underserved, low-income, and primarily minority communities who are disproportionately impacted by pesticide exposure through their occupations. I am proud that the revised standard we're announcing today will prevent and reduce farm worker exposure to pesticides and foster a healthier, safer workforce. We will not turn our backs on the people that help feed this nation. The rule achieves this with common sense, practical solutions that will not disrupt agriculture or adversely impact our nation's farms. We look forward to engaging with the broad farm worker and grower communities as we implement these landmark revisions. I want to thank you and now turn it over to Secretary Thomas Perez of the Department of Labor.
Thank you, Administrator McCarthy, for your leadership in taking this rule to the finish line. It's been an honor to work with you and your team on this very, very important effort. Workers should never have to put their lives at risk for their livelihood. When you go to work in the morning, you have a right to ensure that you're working in a safe and sound environment. That's what this rule is all about. And I've learned in the course of my federal experience that the federal government works best when agencies work in partnership with each other to carry out our important law enforcement responsibilities. And this rule is an example of agency partnership at work. Advancing the cause of justice for farm workers is indeed an all-hands-on-deck enterprise. It also means protection from pesticide overexposure. It also means ensuring a fair day's pay for an honest day's work for a group of workers that's been all too frequently exploited in the past. It also means safe housing, transportation, and much more for this group of remarkable farm workers. This multifaceted approach that has led to the finalization of this rule has indeed involved several arms of the federal government, including the Labor Department, all working together. And it's not enough to articulate the rights and responsibilities as we've outlined today. It's equally important to ensure that workers know their rights and employers know their responsibilities. At the Labor Department, we're very proud to be a partner in this effort to advance justice for farm workers. We enforce minimum wage and child labor laws. Our wage and hour division aggressively investigates wage violations in the agriculture industry, securing back pay totaling $4.5 million for more than 12,000 workers in the last fiscal year. Our National Farm Worker Justice Program, NFJP, provides services to address chronic unemployment and underemployment among migrant and seasonal farm workers. We enforce the Migrant and Seasonal Agricultural Protection Act, which covers safe transportation, living, and housing. We also enforce a range of safety and health regulations, including field sanitation, clean drinking water, and bathrooms. As a result of all of these important enforcement responsibilities, we have regular interaction with the farm worker community, and through this interaction, we intend to play a very aggressive role in ensuring not only that these rights are out there, but that they are known by the community. And so we're very excited to work with the department, the EPA, on this effort. These protections also include robust anti-retaliation protections that are part of the new rule, which are consistent with those that are set by OSHA and the Department of Labor for non-agricultural workers, so that farm workers are now more free to speak up when they experience or witness safety violations. And as Administrator McCarthy pointed out, the new regulation also requires employers to provide respirator fit testing, training, and medical evaluation, which aligns very perfectly with the longstanding OSHA standards. Of course, regulations are only as effective as the government's capacity and will to enforce them. And as I noted, their success depends on people knowing and understanding their rights. And so moving forward, we will be on the ground. Our wage and hour division, for instance, will be on the ground and is in the fields conducting investigations. So we will use that access to spread the word about the danger of pesticides and distribute EPA information about the new protections. We will also disseminate information by sharing it with the NFJP grantees that I mentioned earlier, who work directly with farm workers. We also conduct a National Agricultural Workers Survey, which will collect important information about the health of farm workers. And we leverage the H2A program to ensure that agricultural employers receive pesticide safety training. So we have a lot of interaction points with both farm workers and employers, and we intend to use those so that all of the nation's 2 million agricultural workers will enjoy these critical protections, because as Gina McCarthy correctly pointed out, these workers are doing remarkably important work to ensure that we can indeed feed the nation and indeed feed many parts of the world. The least we can do is empower the workers and their families, because they play a critical role in ensuring the health and well-being of people across the nation and around the globe. So we look forward to continuing our partnership with the EPA to make sure we spread the word about this very important rule, to make sure we continue to enforce the DOL regulations that complement these efforts. And with that, I want to thank you again, Administrator McCarthy, for your leadership and for your team's work. And I have the privilege of now turning this over to my good friend, President Arturo Rodriguez. Arturo, adelante.
Thank you very much, Secretary Perez. And it is a real privilege and honor to join with you today, Administrator McCarthy, as well as with you, Secretary Perez, for this momentous announcement. As President of the United Farm Workers, and having spent my life fighting alongside farm workers in the fields, I have seen up close the consequences of farm workers not being afforded key and essential workplace protections granted to other U.S. laborers. Past discriminatory practices forced farm workers to be excluded from major federal labor laws since the 1930s. Then, most farm workers in the southern United States were African Americans. In California, they were mostly from Mexico and the Philippines, and Mexican Americans born in the United States, such as Cesar Chavez and his family. We just celebrated this weekend the 50th anniversary of the brave women and men who walked out on strike in Delano when first forming the United Farm Workers. And today's announcement is a dream come true for all of those folks that fought so hard in those very early days. Protecting both farm workers and consumers has been a hallmark of the United Farm Workers since the 1960s. The first time DDT and two other toxic pesticides were banned in the United States was not by the EPA. It was via a UFW contract with a grape grower in 1967. UFW has continued negotiating union contracts with pesticide protections. Our founder, Cesar Chavez, asked, what good does it do to achieve the blessing of collective bargaining and make economic progress for people when their health is destroyed in the process? The union exposed cancer clusters in the Central Valley during the 1980s. Cesar Chavez's last and longest public fast of 36 days in 1988 was over the pesticide poisoning of farm workers and their children. UFW helped enact basic pesticide protections in California, Texas, and Washington State during the 1980s, 90s, and early 2000s. They included posting in the fields, waiting periods before reentry, and pesticide drift notifications near schools. We have worked with President Obama, EPA Administrator McCarthy, Secretary Perez, and others in the administration to end this discrimination against farm workers. Here is what this means for farm workers now in all 50 of our United States. And Administrator McCarthy mentioned all these areas, but it's so critical now that we will no longer allow children to apply pesticides. This new EPA rule requires all pesticide applicators to be at least 18 years of age. And additionally, the whole issue of providing pesticide training and the requirements are going to be enforced here is of utmost importance. The fact that we now have whistleblower protections even allows undocumented farm workers to come out and express themselves, and allows farm workers improved access to important health records to determine what happens with them in the future. So today, we can say that most of the same rules that have protected other American workers from dangerous cancer and birth defect causing pesticides are finally going to protect farm workers under the new EPA regulations. It is never too late to do the right thing. It's been a long time coming, but it's come today, and we are so honored to be here with you today, Administrator McCarthy and Secretary Perez, to announce this and to look towards a new future for farm workers in the United States. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. At this time, operator, we'd like to pause for a few moments to compile questions from reporters. If you could please let them know how to ask a question.
In order to ask a question over the phone, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause just for a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
Thank you. I'll let you know when we're ready to get started. Thank you, operator. We're ready for the first question.
Your first question comes from the line of Mary Claire Jelonek from the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. I was wondering if this applies to all pesticides. You all say that anyone under 18 cannot handle pesticides. Are there any pesticides that are exempt from that? Is there anything that might be considered less harmful that someone could handle if they were under 18?
Yeah, this one has to do specifically for agriculture, and we do exempt family farms. So it is about agriculture, it is about hazardous pesticides, and it is set at a minimum age of 18.
Okay, so there aren't any certain types of pesticides that would be exempt from this. This is all pesticides that are used
for
agriculture.
That is correct.
Thanks. Next question, please. Next question, please.
Yes, your next question comes from Dan Looker from the Successful Farming magazine. Your line is open.
Yes, thanks for taking my question. I wondered if this would affect farm workers in the Midwest very much. There's no doubt, of course, that it would affect those in Texas and Florida and California, but I wondered if you can think of any farms in the Midwest that would be affected.
There, as you probably, I'm sure you're aware, there are farm workers in every state.
Yes.
Obviously, there are more in some than others, but this will apply to all the farm workers, whether they're U.S. or they're migrant farm workers. It's going to apply to them and to the farms in the U.S.
Thanks. Next question, please.
Your next question comes from the line of Dave Jamieson from the Huffington Post. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks everyone for doing the call. I was wondering if somebody could explain what the current rules are as they relate to minors and pesticides. Are there any age restrictions at all right now on that front? And was also hoping
these work with the farm farm workers so they understand their rights and what they should expect. And then we'll be doing compliance work, help with trainings. This will be a collaboration between us and the states as well.
Thanks. Next question, please.
Your next question comes from the line of Jerry Hagstrom from Hagstrom Report. Your line is open.
Yes, my question was also about enforcement. So would this be the Environmental Protection Agency in each of the 50 states? And also the Labor Department in each of the 50 states that does this at first. And the feds get involved only when there seems to be a problem that the rules are not being enforced?
Well, all of the states are going to be doing inspections and will be responsible for enforcement. It varies in each state who is given that authority. In most states, it's the agriculture department that actually works these.
Someone could explain kind of when it comes to enforcement, where the responsibilities are going to lay between EPA and DOL.
Yeah, just to be clear, the current worker protection standards for EPA that were established about 20 years ago had no minimum age in it. So now the minimum age is 18. Individual states can and have established minimum ages across the U.S. Some have, some haven't. This provides a national certainty that the age will be established at 18. And in terms of enforcement, this is enforcement is shared as it is with most of EPA regulations. It's working with states. They usually are the line of first protections. And then EPA also can enforce. But we're going to have an opportunity over the next year to be able to work with the farmers so they can understand their responsibility. If you'd let me ask Jim, there's some exceptions to that if you want to identify them.
Yeah, this is Jim Jones. There are a couple of exceptions to that in the states of California, New York, and New Jersey. It is the Environment Department that has the enforcement responsibility.
But it's up to EPA to work with states to make sure that we're monitoring the states doing their job and that we respond if issues come our way as well. So we're hoping that this will be a year of building the compliance strategies with all of the agriculture community so that we can hit the ground running and make sure that this is implemented properly.
Thanks. Next question, please.
Your next question comes from the line of Tiffany Stecker from Greenwire. Your line is open.
Yes. Thanks for taking my question. Just a specific. I noticed that the warning sign is going to stay the same from the current. And in the proposal, you had proposed to change the keep out to entry restricted. I'm wondering why you decided not to make that change to the sign.
Jim, you want to handle that?
Yeah, in the comments that we got from the worker advocacy community, we were basically told that sign was, that language was more effective and easily understood.
Thanks. Next question, please.
Your next question comes from the line of Ellen Ferguson from CQ Roll Call. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for having the call. You talked about reaching out to various stakeholders in addition to representatives and advocates for farm workers. I took that to mean also the ag industry. If so, how is that input reflected in what in the final rules?
Well, I think we listened to all stakeholders as we were moving through this process, and I think you all know that we work pretty closely with the USDA as well. Who gives us sage advice on how to do our rules in a way that makes sense for the farmers as well. I think you'll see from looking at the costs of this that the cost of not updating this is pretty high on farm workers, but the cost of implementing this is a very reasonable cost. For large farmers, we're talking about between $300 and $400, and for a smaller farm, it's half that. So we really think there's opportunities for us to work together to make sure that they're not losing their farm workers to illnesses, that they are understanding how we can work together to train them effectively, and we can keep putting food on the table in a way that allows the farming community to be successful all around. And I also want to recognize I know Secretary Perez is probably still on the line. How important it is for us to collaborate with the Department of Justice as well to make sure that our rules are being consistent. The question was asked earlier about enforcement, and Secretary, you can weigh in as well. But the EPA and DOJ, in particular OSHA, collaborate to make sure that we're supporting state efforts on enforcement, supporting farm owners who want to know what the rules are and implementing them, and responding to complaints and whistleblowers and doing routine compliance audits. So DOJ does the same, and we try to coordinate our activities pretty closely. And DOJ has been just a wonderful partner in this entire effort, as has across the administration, all of the agencies, recognizing that this is a community that has been left behind. That they're looking for fair and equitable treatment, and this is what we hope to provide them. Secretary, do you want to add anything to that?
Sure. We have regular interaction with many key stakeholders in the farm worker community. So, for instance, we put out bulletins on a regular basis that give critical information to key stakeholders. So, for instance, when we had issues with heat stroke in the summer, we would use that outreach tool to make sure that people were aware of certain safety precautions you could take. We also we give out a lot of grants to nonprofits through our OSHA office, and so we have these already regular lines of interaction with these key stakeholder groups, and that's why we've been very excited to be involved in this effort, because one thing we don't want to do is reinvent wheels that are already out there. And so getting the word out between the nonprofit stakeholders, between the work we do with the employer communities already, these regular sources of communication, I'm quite confident that we can make sure that people are aware of their rights, because, again, hard to exercise. It's impossible to exercise your rights if you don't know of their existence. And so and this is particularly true in working with farm workers, because all too frequently they feel like they must live in the shadows. And so our goal is to bring them out of the shadows and into the sunshine here, so that they understand their rights and can exercise their rights. And we have a lot of longstanding vehicles that will enable us to do that.
Thanks. Next question, please.
Your next question comes from the line of David Schultz from Bloomberg BNA. Your line is open.
Hi. I wanted to ask about the minimum age requirements in the draft rule that you released a year ago. The minimum age was 16, and now in the final rule it's been changed to 18. And I wanted to talk about why you guys decided to increase the minimum age and what effect that will have.
Well, I think you probably recognize, Dave, that EPA, I think, is listening really closely to comments that come in under our rules. And we're doing a lot of outreach to make sure that people understand that they have an ability to talk to us and to tell us what they think of the rules. You're right, we did propose originally 16, but if you look at the wealth of comments that we received, it seemed very clear based on the science that was provided to us that there are good reasons to actually look at raising that to 18, and we felt that that was most appropriate. You know, primarily there's been a lot of research done of late on the brains of our children and how they develop, and how in many ways they slowly develop in terms of having sound judgment. And frankly, if there are so many other laws on the books, like DOL laws, that go to 18 for hazardous work conditions, there's nothing that we think deserves closer scrutiny and attention than the handling of pesticides. So we decided that 18 was really, based on the record, the most appropriate thing to do, and the one that was consistent with other industries. And frankly, we're working very hard here to make sure that farm workers know that they have the same equities and the same fairness that other industry groups are being provided.
Thanks. And we have time for one last question.
And your last question comes from the line of Allison Rice from Farm Journal Media. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Allison. I'm curious, how is this, what was released today, how does this differ or fit with the August proposal you all had for the restricted use pesticides?
Thanks, Allison. I'll have Jim take a shot at that.
This is Jim Jones. So the rule that we're finalizing today, it governs practices and training associated with farm workers. The rule that we proposed in August deals with the requirements for an individual to become certified to use a restricted use pesticide. So in the United States, you cannot use a restricted-use pesticide. Those are the pesticides that have the most potential risk associated with them unless you've been certified by a state. And that regulation, the proposed regulation, governs the standards for the certification. So there's a little bit of overlap between them. But, again, this rule today is around the requirements and work practices and training associated with farm workers, the vast majority of whom are actually not pesticide applicators, but a subset of them are. And the rule in August deals with becoming certified to use a restricted use pesticide.
Thanks, and thank you all for joining us. Operator, this concludes our media conference call.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.